Up for this topic on a Saturday morning? Are you guys all wide awake, afraid what he's going to say? Going to get embarrassed here maybe? Who knows, huh? Well, church doesn't do a lot of good teaching on this subject, unfortunately. You know, people don't even know how to ask the right questions, and then they're answering questions people aren't answering. It reminds me of a story of a father who was trying to, you know, he had a precocious young boy, and he knew the questions were going to come up, and he was all ready for it. And finally, the boy sprung it on him. He says, "Dad, where did I come from?" And he was ready. So he went into a long spiel. He went into the birds and the bees, and he explained it all to him. And he looked at him. He's done. And he says, "Huh, Johnny came from Cleveland." So you got to be careful what questions you ask. Got to be careful what questions you're answering. And, when it comes to sexuality and the way God made us and God's plan and all these things, you want to kind of get it right, because people are asking these things. Even if they're not speaking them openly, they've got questions, and especially our young people, but not just young people, all of us do. So I hadn't figured out a lot of this stuff until I was in my 50s. I mean, I was... Like Ed said, I've known Ed a long time, and Kelly, and active in the church. Actually went to, Christian college, went to seminary for a while. I was going to go down that road. It didn't, wasn't the thing for me. I became an accountant instead, which was good, because I wouldn't have made a good pastor. But so the Lord's been watching over me, and I can't say I really went off the rails at any point, you know, but I didn't have this part of my life figured out at all. I just didn't know. I just didn't have it figured out. And then when I figured it out, by God's grace, it was so obvious and so clear that I thought, well, okay, now what? I started looking inward and outward, and I said, why didn't I know this stuff? Why didn't I understand properly? Because I'm the kind of guy who reads a lot and pays a lot of attention to stuff. And I should have known the stuff I know now. And so the kinds of things that I'm going to talk about today are things that every Christian, from the time they're a young person, man or woman, boy or girl, they need to should understand these things, because it's God's word, it's God's plan. And instead, we get our information from the world and from psychology and from our best friend, or however we get our information, and we try to create an ethic, we try to create an understanding of what's going on inside of us and how we should behave. And it's really much deeper than just sexuality. It has to do with what kind of a Christian we become. Now, there are really only two kinds of Christians. And think in your mind, where is he going with this thing? You could say, well, there's Christians who are Catholics, and there's Christians who are Protestants. Well, that's not true. There's a lot of other kinds of Christians. There's charismatics and non-charismatics. That kind of works pretty good. But really, we have to go back to God's word, and God's word is pretty clear. There are only two kinds of Christians, and this came from Jesus. So, he told a story where he laid this out. Let's see if I can get this thing to work right. There we go. He told a story, and this story is the most talked about story in the Bible. It shows up in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and it's about the sower and the seed. And he said that there's four kinds of seeds, and some of them land on the path, and they get eaten up by the birds, and there's some seeds that don't end up on rocky soil. They don't put down roots. But then there's two other kinds of seeds, and one of those seeds ends up in good soil. This is the good stuff. And they grow up, and they are the normal Christian. They receive God's word with gladness, and they grow, and they mature, and they bear fruit, and everything is hunky-dory. That's what a normal Christian is like. Well, the other kind of Christian is the one who doesn't do that. And that kind of Christian lands in the thorns. And so when you're talking about that kind of Christian, that Christian never matures. It never matures. And you go, why doesn't it mature? Why isn't it normal? Well, because of the thorns. Now, what are the thorns? I got it up there. You can see there's three kinds of thorns. There's worries, cares of this world. You've got riches, money, and stuff like that. And then pleasure. And so we're going to talk about pleasure today. Pleasure, none of these things are bad. Riches aren't bad. We're supposed to give. We're made to care about things, and so we have cares and worries, and we, you know, that's not a bad thing. We're supposed to turn them over to God. We know how to need to handle these things. Pleasure is not a bad thing. Pleasure is a good thing, and so you have to go back and say, what is pleasure then? Why does it choke people? Why does rich? You know, we can. It's kind of easy to imagine riches choking people. They're all caught up in getting stuff, and you know that whole story, acquiring things. And we can kind of understand worrying, but that's a sin people don't talk about too much, but it's a very big problem. People are overwhelmed by worries. Do you have something new to worry about? Have you looked in the newspapers? Or a new thing to worry about? Or maybe it could just be mundane things, or your health, or anything in this life can become a worry. But pleasure is one of these things that's kind of good in a way. I mean, why would pleasure be bad? Why would it choke you? Why would it take charge? Why did God even, and then some people even say this, I have such a strong desire for pleasure, I wonder, why did God even put that in me? Why did he make me this way? It's, you know, the problems I have with sex and lust and all these things, they come from pleasure, and that's the way God made me. Why did he do that? Why did he put that in me? And so you have to go back to that question. Why did God make pleasure? Well, pleasure, and scientists are just kind of learning this stuff now, exactly what pleasure is, because pleasure is something that happens deep in the brain. And it has to do with neuroreceptors and oxytocin and dopamine, big words. I don't know exactly what they all do, but somewhere, neuroreceptors, they have different words for it, but if certain things will trigger your neurons in your brain, create a little pathway to another part of your brain and set off these drugs, or they don't even know, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, neuroreceptors are called, I guess, but those things create pleasure, and that pleasure is intense. And the process of getting there is really very, very hard to understand. It takes brain science, and they're trying to figure it out. They have figured it out now. And they know that if you do something that gives you that pleasure, if you do something like that, your brain remembers it, and it builds a little neuron highway. A little neuron builds in your brain, makes it all work. And the more you do it, the bigger that highway gets. And so you could just start down that highway, you're going to get this little pleasure buzz. You're going to get that pleasure. And so the purpose for that, when it comes to sexual pleasure, is this. You bond with your wife. A person bonds with, a man bonds with a woman bonds with a man. They receive pleasure together. And they build this little highway in their brains. And every time they're with their spouse, a little bit of pleasure kicks in. After a while, that becomes the normal way for them to get pleasure. And they set aside all other sources of sexual pleasure. And so they become one flesh. And this is really cool because this lasts forever. This lasts for their whole marriage. They have this bond with their spouse. And that's the reason for pleasure, is to create this bond, because it's really hard to stay together with someone a long time and to receive only pleasure from that person all the time, because there's a lot of other places that people can get pleasure. And so if if you do it the way God designed it, the only place you get this pleasure is from your spouse. And you set aside all else. And then you bond and you become one flesh. And that's, we're going to talk a little bit more about that a little bit here. But if you misuse pleasure, passed up here. So if you're writing down the notes here, you can look at that screen there for a minute there. But the goal is to create a bond. That's the reason for pleasure. Now, when you misuse pleasure, it's called lust. And that's lust is kind of a four-letter word people don't like using anymore. Christians don't like using lust at all. I found that out when I wrote my book, put out a website with lust in it. Oh, man, people don't like it at all. They think it's a bad word. And and even Bible scholars don't like the word lust very much. And it shows up in the Bible, the older versions of the Bible. It says lust here, lust there, everywhere lust. And the lust of the flesh and all this stuff. Well, lust is in the Bible, if you Greek people here, there's no word lust in Greek. There's a word called desire. And when the word lust translated lust, it's only by the context that we know it's lust. In other words, it's plain sexual desire misused. And it's called lust. And you know by the context whether it is. But there's no separate word for lust. Lust, desire can be good. Desire can be bad. What makes it bad? When it's misused. And then, so you look at your newer versions like the NEV, the NIV, and use a lot of these passages that said lust in them before now say another word. They say evil desires. Well, that's confusing. What is an evil desire? But you look at it. You look at your new versions, and they say that. They don't like the word lust. Lust is a bad word. It's a real bad word. People don't like to use it, and people don't want to look at themselves and say, boy, I've got lust. But everybody, in English, we created this new word that so it takes away the confusion. But now these Bible translators are bringing back the confusion. There was no confusion in the old days what it was. But lust is a bad thing. But now because, and that's what we're going to talk about today is the word lust. And we're going to say, well, what is lust? Now, lust, and we're going to have three short sessions, by the way. We'll have a little break between each of them because this is kind of intense stuff. This won't take too long. But lust, the first thing you have to know about lust, and this is kind of a revelation for some people, is lust is willful. People say, well, it's automatic for me. See that? Lust. See this? Lust. And they think it's automatic because they've trained their brain to get pleasure out of many, many things. They get their pleasure. So their brain has what's called this, they call it a neural highway. They built this neural highway. So it doesn't take very much for them to get sexual pleasure. Or maybe it takes certain things to get sexual pleasure. They get it a lot of different ways. But they say, if I get into this situation, lust happens. It just happens. It's nothing I did. It just happens. And I see this kind of description all the time. And people don't want to take the responsibility, say, lust is an action word. I have to make it happen. No, not for me. Man, I see that. Boom, I'm lusting right away. Boy, I just get all charged up. Well, that's not true. You have to make it happen. It's a willful thing. And we'll get into this a little bit more so you can kind of understand where I'm going with this thing. But if you get that idea in your head that it's willful, then that changes the environment a little bit because now you're saying, well, wait, willful? Why? You know, that can't be right. But let's keep going here. The next thing is that it's a gratified, misdirected sexual desire. That's a lot of words. I wrote this, you have this handout here so you don't have to write all this out, but it's a lot of words. And I'm going to give you a simple definition in a minute, but This is, just to break it down for you, it's willful and you gratify it. You know, what's he talking about, gratify? You willfully gratify a desire. You have this desire, and you gratify it. And it's misdirected. Well, we know what misdirected means, right? Everybody but your wife. It's misdirected. If you're gratifying a desire that's not your wife, or if you're a woman and it's not your husband, it's misdirected. You're not allowed to do that. And that doesn't seem right to a lot of people either. They think, well, you know, eye candy, the world's out there, beautiful world out there, I'm going to enjoy life. No, it's, you're gratifying it. And it's misdirected. And then you go, and then the question comes up, how do I know if I'm doing that? How do I know if I'm doing that? How do I know that I've sinned? And so you get into this whole confusion thing, right? And that's great, be confused, because that gets you, lets you get away with things. So instead, we're gonna just find one simple method of finding it. It's a willful, gratified, misdirected sexual desire, and it's evidenced by a sinful, pleasurable, internal buzz. Everybody here knows what I'm talking about. Everybody here knows what I'm talking about. You get that charge, that little electrical jolt deep inside your brain, that oxytocin and dopamine, whatever's going on in there, it's all of a sudden, boom, you got that pleasurable pleasure. That's pleasure. That's the pleasure part. That's what Jesus was saying. That pleasure is what you're going for. You're not going for the other stuff. You want that little pleasure button pushed in your brain. And initially it's not visible at all. Even if somebody were to fully examine you, they wouldn't know what happened. But boy, you feel it inside and you know that it happened. And that's when it's lust. And you go, well, that's a lot of words. I can't even remember this definition. And if I turn the screen off, you won't remember until she looked back. So we got to come up with a simple definition. Well, fortunately, Jesus did. He called it adultery in the heart. Adultery in the heart. When you cause that pleasure, you are committing sin in your heart, inside. Not talking about anything else you're doing. I'm talking about the sin inside. And that buzz, I'm calling it a buzz, maybe we can come up with a better word or another idea, but you know what I'm talking about. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Every woman knows what I'm talking about. They don't experience the same way as a man, but everybody has that ability to get a buzz, a sexual buzz, by gratifying this sinful desire. And what Jesus said what Jesus said was, whoever looks at a woman with lustful intent is committing adultery in his heart. Everybody knows that, right? Remember Jimmy Carter? He said, he was this wonderful, godly president, running for president, and he was interviewed by Playboy magazine, and he admitted that he had adultery in the heart, and it was in every newspaper, said, Jimmy Carter has adultery in the heart. Ha ha. He thinks he's a spiritual guy, and he's got adultery in the heart. So people expect Christians to not do this. They say, well, that's what Jesus said. And if you go to any other religion, they will not argue this point with Jesus. Nobody argues this with Jesus, that it's a bad thing to lust. There aren't any cultures that think it's okay to have these lustful feelings for other women or other men in your heart. If you look at you know, the Muslim world, they're really into this problem. They don't want men to lust, and if it happens, it's not their fault. You know, it's because the woman wasn't wearing a burqa or was misbehaving or doing something. It's somebody else's fault. So they don't think it's willful. They think it's somebody else's fault that it happened. And so they're kind of coming at it from that side. But when Jesus said this, he went further. He said, you know what? He says, right after, next verse, he says, if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Boy, that's a problem. I mean, lust is a big problem, Jesus is saying, right? You know, you got an eye, you got a hand, causes you to sin. You got other parts of your body that seem to cause you to sin. Cut it off. It's better to go cut that thing off than it is to go to hell. That's what he's saying. Why don't you just cut it off? And so people misunderstand that. But what's he saying there? He's saying, it isn't your hand. If it was, cut it off. It's not your eye. If it was, pluck it out. He says, it's not any of those things. It's your heart. It's your heart. So don't be looking at this issue, this part of your body or that part of your body. I'll take it a step further. Don't look at it as a problem of pornography or Netflix or your cell phone or the gal who lives next door or the person you work with or any other problem that's causing you. It's not that. It's not that. It's not her. It's your heart. So if you can't, the goal here is to remove adultery from the heart. That's where you address the problem, in the heart. And so that straightens out all kinds of problems, but not all the problems. Because then you go, wow, well, okay, that's easy for you to say, Jim. This is a tough world. I'm a mess. This is a mess. This doesn't work. And so so people start to say, well, I kind of hear what you're saying, but you don't understand that desire, the way I feel desire. I am just a charged up guy. I can't stop thinking about this stuff. I'm different than you. I'm younger than you. I got more testosterone. I got more temptations. I have a lot of desire inside of me. And you're telling me to get rid of that desire. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not telling you to get rid of that desire. Matter of fact, that desire is a good thing. It's God given to you. The difference is that this desire should not be gratified internally to create that internal buzz. So you can and should desire all good things that God has for you. And you need to be able to separate the desire from the pleasure. The pleasure doesn't need to be experienced. Now you say, man, I kind of get what you're saying, but I don't follow that. Okay, well, let me give you an example that you might be able to understand. There are people who have a desire for sexual activity with children. I don't understand it, but they do. Pedophiles. They have a desire to be with children. There are people who have a desire for sexual contact with other men. I don't get it, but they do. There are people who have all kinds of distorted sexualities that they have desires for. They don't know where they come from. I don't want to know where they come from. I don't understand them. I'm not that too concerned about them because they don't bother me. Because the minute they happen, or if I were to get an idea of, let's say, some kind of sexual contact with a family member, you know, my sister, I have two good-looking sisters, and I go, do I have a desire for them? Well, you know, at some weird level, maybe, you know, but what do? You just recoil from it. You know, I'm not going there. And that's the way you do too. There are things that you recoil from. Some sexual desires you recoil from. And it isn't just because they're more evil, they are, perhaps, than what other people do. But other people have those desires, and they can't control them. But you do control those desires, and you've made them kind of a taboo, it's called. So you won't go there. You're not going to go there. Well, that's the same identical kind of reaction you should have to all sin. And this takes a while to develop. So I'm not, you know, I'm not saying, well, now you figured, now I told you, go out and do this. But this is the goal, is that every area, every sexual desire you have that's out there, you can't control those desires. You can't say, I got to get rid of that desire. Maybe if I pray a lot, that desire is going to go away. You can't do that with desire. Desires are complicated. But you can stop yourself from gratifying that desire by, in your heart, from committing sin in your heart. You can do that. It's a willful thing. And that's a key to all of this. If you don't take away anything else, understand this, that your sin, your lust is your choice. You're choosing to do this. Nobody's making you do it. You're doing it. And so if your desires are bad, well, God help you, and He will. He's not going to take them away. It's not some demon in you that has to go be thrust out of you. You just have to stop gratifying it. You have to stop making room for it in you. You got to break down. You got to have a renewed mind. All these things will happen as you stop acting on them. And so the next thing is, well, maybe I can't control my desires, but there's one, maybe I can handle them, but there's one thing I can control, and that's my thoughts. Thoughts are really something, man. How can I control my thoughts? I'm in church, worshiping God, open my eyes, and I see something that makes me lust. It made me lust. I just saw something, I just thought about it, and I thought, and maybe I had my eyes closed, and I was just thinking about something I saw the night before, or 30 years ago, or did 20 years ago. And I'm thinking, that thought, where did that come from? I didn't want to think about that. And so, you know, what do you do with those thoughts? And that's lust, isn't it? Well, no, thoughts aren't lust. You cannot control your thoughts. Nobody can control their thoughts. Whatever you're thinking about, maybe I gave you some little trigger in your mind, you're thinking about something right now. You can't control that thought and make it go away. Now, they've done studies on this called thought control. And so they had to do experiments. They say, okay, now, you guys, stop thinking about pink elephants. It's kind of a famous experiment. Stop thinking about them. You know, whatever you have to do to yourself in terms of changing your mind about stuff, stop thinking about pink elephants. Well, it doesn't work. Now, all of a sudden, that's the only thing you can think about is pink elephants. Never thought about pink elephants before, but now you're thinking about them. And so the mind is such an incredibly fast-moving thing. I'm sitting here talking. Well, your mind is going 30 times faster than I'm talking. You're thinking about all kinds of things. And your mind is just going, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, powerful weapon or instrument that God has given us, our thoughts. And our thoughts can go all over the place, and they overmesh, and they take in all of our experiences, and we can't control those thoughts. We can only take them captive. That's what the Bible calls it. You take it captive. You take that thought. So let's say you have some really wild thought, sinful thought. What are you going to do with that thought? I'm not going to think about that anymore. I'm going to think about something else. I'm going to read my Bible more or something. No, you take it captive. You say, aha, there's my thought. I'm going to hang it on the wall. I'm not going to act on that thought. I'm not going to get that pleasure buzz. See, that's what it's all about, right? The pleasure. That's the thing that's going to, you start acting on that pleasure and you start thinking about that a lot. And after a while, you're thinking about stuff you shouldn't be thinking about. You're actually creating a buzz inside your mind just from your thoughts. It had nothing, you didn't see anything. You're out in the woods. You're far away from everybody. And then this thing is, it's interesting to read the biographies of monks who they go out and they're they're trying to be really spiritual and the biggest thing they deal with is lust. They can't, their thoughts are just there. It's not, they've created a world that is so austere and separated isolated, but all they have in their mind is lust. They struggle with it, and they write about it, and they're dealing with it, and they pray about it, and they don't know what to do about it, and they can't control their thoughts, and they go, man, if I just do this, deprive myself of this, or do more of this, or get more of that, or read my Bible more, pray more, that lust is going to go away. No, it doesn't go away until you willfully stop receiving the pleasure buzz in you. And then it doesn't, I don't want to simplify it too much, but you gain a victory over it. And so what we're talking about here is get equipped for victory. So what does that look like? What does it look like to have victory over lust? So here's a real simple definition of victory or freedom. There's different ways to describe this. But the way it looks is this. You, first of all, you recognize what you're dealing with. And that's what this first session is about, recognizing the problem. You recognize it. And then before you get the pleasure, you recoil. Okay? You recoil from it. Now, you know what this is like because this is when you think about your sister, right? You recoil from it. It's a taboo. Boom. I'm just pulling back from it. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to let my mind go there. And I could maybe use other examples. And none of them are very pleasant because any of this stuff is kind of ugly in a way. You know, you don't want to talk about this. But that's what it takes. You recognize what's coming down the line, and you recoil from it. And that idea of, or that concept of recognizing the sin, and I hope you can recognize it after this little talk I've had here, that what I'm talking about here, I hope you do. If you don't, think about it some more, and look at your notes here. But separate, don't let, and we'll keep coming back to this issue, because it's the core issue here. But that idea of recognizing the sin, you don't get anywhere unless you identify the sin. I can tell you to stop lusting, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you might think, well, you want me to stop using pornography. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying you should not stop it. I'm just saying you. That's not the issue. The issue is lust. All these other sexual problems are not lust. They are manifestations of lust. And so all the things, so if you go into deep immersion type systems of, I'm going to get rid of this, I'm going to get rid of that, they're not going to work unless you get rid of the lust. It's sort of like when you have a whole lawn of weeds, and you mow over it, and it looks pretty good, but then the weeds come back up because the roots are there. And if you have roots of lust in your life, they're going to come back. You've got to go right to the root, right to the heart. That's where you got to act. You got to go right to where the problem is, the way Jesus described it. Now, there's a passage in Job, and maybe you've heard this before, where he says, Job 31, well, let's go back to, I'll come back to that one there. But you have, in Job 31, it says that Job, you know, he's defending himself. He says, I made a covenant with my eyes that I'm not going to gaze after a woman. I made this covenant in my mind. I said, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to take that long, satisfying look at a woman to gratify that lust inside. And that's, you know, that's a pretty common verse. But there's another verse just few verses down, verse 7, and that verse is, exactly how it goes, it says, I have not let my heart follow my eyes. That's such a great, I mean, Job is the oldest book in the Bible. We don't know when Job lived, but it was a long time ago, and there were no Abraham, none of this around. Apparently, it was way before all that. It was just a time when this godly man, Job, went through all his trouble and lived his life and made his defense and wrote this long book in the Bible, 31 chapters, pretty heavy stuff. And he's saying, you know, He says, I'm a blameless guy. I don't let my heart follow my eyes. I don't let my heart wander after my eyes. And so your eyes are going to see a lot of things. A lot of things. And especially in our world, right? We think we're special, but, you know, maybe we are. But it's always been a problem. I mean, it's crazy to think that we're special problems we have, you know, with cell phones and internet and all that. But it's always been a problem. And so here's Job way back then. He's saying, I didn't let my heart follow my eyes. And that's very, very profound thinking, isn't it? This is what you don't do. You don't let your heart follow your eyes. It's kind of another way of saying what Jesus said. Don't adultery in the heart. So it's all in there. That's scriptural. This is Bible. This is what God has. He has an expectation of how you use your thoughts and your desires and the pleasure thing. You don't have to have pleasure, but if you're married, that's where it belongs. That's where it belongs, and that's where it works, and that's where it's wonderful, and that's where it accomplishes fantastic things in a marriage in terms of bonding people together. But you don't have to go there. And you should not go there except with your wife, and if you don't have a wife, you shouldn't go there, period. And this is very, very foreign to the world and to most people's thinking, but you don't go there. You don't develop that pleasure buzz. You don't go there and make that a big part of your life. Now, I'm an accountant, so I'm going to give you a little accounting teaching here. So when we do audits of organizations, we have to look for fraud now. Fraud is a big, big problem. People are stealing from companies, doing bad things, and companies are saying, we don't want fraud. We got to stop it. So they analyze, and the things they learned, they apply to other things. They apply to all sin, actually. Fraud is a sin, stealing, but they apply to everything else. So I want you to think about this in terms of a triangle. That's the way accountants talk. This comes right out of an accounting textbook, auditing textbook. So you got to have all three parts to make the triangle work. Now, one of them is need. So let's talk about the need for lust. Do you really need lust? I've stated here that you don't. And I think that, you know, they have studies. You don't need sexual pleasure, misdirected pleasure. It's just not necessary. It's not a requirement for living. And you can get by without it. And so need is, you know, you could say, well, I just don't have that need. But that's kind of hard to, if you've been doing it for a while, you don't feel that. You feel like you have a need. And it feels like a need. And you can't turn it off. So then you say, well, I'll work on that need side, but opportunity is everywhere. Everywhere I go, I see things that make me, I can't handle. I can't handle that. I can't handle this. I see this, I see that, I think this, I think that, I hear this, music, whatever, you know, whatever is going on, I've got this opportunity to lust. And so people say, well, I'm going to get rid of that. I'm going to get rid of my computer. I'm going to get rid of my TV. I'm going to get rid of my DirecTV. I'm going to get rid of Netflix. I'm going to get rid of these things because they create opportunity. And so they try to create opportunities. Well, that does work. It's necessary to an extent. In other words, you don't create all kinds of opportunities for yourself and test yourself, but you can't totally control the opportunities for lust because, like I said, you can be around nobody and have tremendous troubles with lust. It's not the opportunity. You can't get rid of the opportunity because it's going on in your heart. So the one part where you can, the other thing that happens, so this is a typical example. Somebody says, I really need money, because I am broke and my family's starving, and so that's my need. So I will steal because of that. This is just an example. And then you say, well, I have to have a rationale to make that happen. Well, I'm broke. My boss has a lot of money. I just want a little bit of money to feed my family. That's my rationale. And then when I go to work, he leaves money laying around. That's the opportunity. I can steal it. So I've got all three things working together. But the trickiest one is the rationale when it comes to lust. Because we create this rationale that I have to lust It's automatic. It's something God put inside me, obviously. And so people create a rationale, and you've kind of heard these rationales. Maybe some of these things resonate with you that I've been saying here, that there's really no choice. I have to lust. The opportunity is here. This thing happened in front of me. I have this need. I feel this really strong need inside of me. And that's my rationale, is I just got to go with it. I have no choice. So that's the kind of thing. So what this first session, I'm trying to get you to just understand it. We're going to wrap it up here. I just want you to kind of understand this thing. And then I want you to think about that rationale that maybe you're holding inside, or that's going to pop up in your mind here and saying, why it's okay for me, even though what you're hearing may kind of make sense at some level. And it may be really very foreign to you. But at some level, you're going to say, well, maybe, you're going to start coming up with a rationale to keep sinning. That's why you want to do it. That's what a rationale is for. You need a reason. You have to live with yourself. You have to say, why did I do this? Why did I do this? And that's the rationale. And so you give yourself a rationale, it gives you a pass, and you move on. So we got to destroy that rationale. And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to destroy that rationale, that reasoning, that reason for sinning. I'm trying to destroy that. And like when Job was saying this, he says, I didn't do this. Well, Job was special. Well, yes and no. It is, and this is what I have found really interesting. I was learning this stuff, and I start talking to people. I'm kind of blunt about it. I'm just, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And what do you do? And so people are never, they don't like talking about it. Start talking. I remember one missionary I was talking to, and he's traveling all the time, flying everywhere, South America mostly. He does a lot of work in South America. And I was talking to him, and I go, okay, so what do you do when you go into an airport and there's all this pornography and stuff, and it's sitting right on the table next to you, and all this stuff? He goes, oh man, I just shudder from it. I go away, It's not that he just doesn't go there. He just doesn't go there. He doesn't walk around and say, oh man, that's no problem for me. That's no problem for me. He just reacts against it. He recoils from it. He just won't go there. Just doesn't let it happen. Now that's the godly response. That's what you got. That's what Job was saying. He's not saying, pretty girls don't bother me. He says, I just don't let my heart follow my eyes. And when Jesus was saying, some people, and I've read this and heard preachers talk about this, that Jesus was talking about kind of an ideal. This adultery in the heart thing is kind of something that he was, Sermon on the Mount and all that stuff, that just isn't really practical. It's not practical teaching. It's the most practical teaching on the subject there is. You got to start there, and you got to take that and say, Jesus meant that. The stuff about the hand, the eyes, the adultery in the heart, that is very practical teaching. That's core teaching. And that's what this is talking about, adultery in the heart and what it looks like to not sin in that way. So that's the end of this session. We'll take about a 10-minute break, and we'll jump into the next thing. Get some more coffee?
child.